Hello, everybody. I'm Parrish Alford.
And I'm Logan Lowry, and this is Double Coverage.
Ole Miss and Mississippi State Talk brought to you by the Daily Journal and DJournal.com.
Hello, everyone. This is Parrish Alford with the Daily Journal. I'm joined by Logan Lowry, our Mississippi State beat writer, and this is Double Coverage, a production of the Daily Journal. We're glad you've chosen to click in with us today. We're going to talk Mississippi State and Ole Miss for the next half hour or so. Logan, how are you, man?
Doing good. Fresh off a bye week or an open date. So doesn't that make you much more fresh and ready to finish the season?
Just ready to get back in it and just focus, like Wesley McGriff says his defensive players need to do at Ole Miss, focus better. That was the biggest difference for them in the second half against Auburn. They were able to fit the run gaps better and slow the Tigers a little bit, hold them to 3 field goals. So we're going to focus for the next half hour or so. Folks, I want to remind you about other podcasts to search for from the Daily Journal. Be sure to look for The Memo, our news podcast, all things Northeast Mississippi with Brad Locke and Derek Russell. That comes to you every Wednesday and Friday. And be sure to check out Prep Rally for all your high school sports needs. That's with Brad Locke and Dalton Middleton. Let me back up a little bit. We've had these changes on the sports staff now, so The Memo is Chris Kiefer and Derek Russell. Still comes to you every Wednesday and Friday. Prep Rally is Brad Locke. We're glad to have Brad back in the saddle in the sports department. That's Prep Rally every Wednesday with Brad and Dalton Middleton. So lots of good stuff there. All right, folks, we got those promos out of the way. Let's talk Mississippi State and Ole Miss now. News of the day on Wednesday, the Houston Nutt lawsuit was refiled. No big surprise there. He is still contending that Ole Miss intentionally misled the scope of his role in the NCAA investigation, how many violations were actually attributed to his staff. So that's back in the news this week. But we're going to talk some football in the program here. Such as it is, Ole Miss and Mississippi State both trying to get past some losing streaks. You know, for a while there, Logan, we thought that Mississippi State might be the number two team in the SEC after they just manhandled LSU, but they've struggled the last couple of weeks. Talk to us about the Bulldogs, man. They're coming off an open date now. You know, what do you see there?
Well, you're right. I mean, when they manhandled LSU on the field, it looked like State had kind of taken a step forward and kind of emerged as that number two team in the West. You know, at the time, Auburn was coming off a loss at Clemson, and of course, Clemson's a very good ball club. But you know, really, Auburn's kind of hit its stride a little bit, and they hit their stride against Mississippi State in their last ball game 2 weeks ago, and you know, manhandled them. And of course, Mississippi State lost a lopsided game as well at Georgia. So Mississippi State, you know, has kind of proven over the last two games that it isn't one of the top teams in the SEC. But I do think Mississippi State still is a pretty good team. I just think that they're kind of in that middle tier in the SEC. You know, they've got another couple of months to kind of prove that down the stretch. I do think State's got a chance to win, you know, pretty much every game on the rest of the schedule, with the exception of Alabama. I think they got another butt kicking coming, you know, from Alabama, like they got from Georgia and Auburn the next couple of weeks. And, I mean, I think those three teams right there have kind of established themselves as the upper echelon of the SEC. And, you know, Mississippi State's kind of in that next tier. And, you know, how high they are in that next tier is going to be proven over the next couple of months. You know, they still got to go to Texas A&M. They got to go to Arkansas. I think those are the two biggest games still remaining on Mississippi State's schedule, is, you know, going on the road to those places where they historically haven't had that much success. So we'll have to just see how they do in those venues there. That Texas A&M game looks like it's going to be a little tougher than it initially would have earlier in the season when Texas came out of the gate struggling. You know, that's usually kind of the role reversal for Texas A&M. Over the last couple of years, they've started off strong and then kind of faded down the stretch, and they came out of the gate slow this year, lost that game at UCLA, you know, when they jumped out to that lead and then lost it, and you know, just didn't play very well out of the gate. But they've kind of picked things up over the last couple of weeks, and that could be a big ball game on Mississippi State's schedule. But even if they split those games between Texas A&M and Arkansas. I do think State still finishes around 8-4, and that's a pretty good season and should land them in a pretty good bowl. But, you know, I like State's chances at home next week against Kentucky. Kentucky's having a really good year. I think they're a good club as well. But, you know, the fact that that game's in Starkville, Kentucky struggled last week against Missouri, barely won that ball game. Missouri's just awful. And Kentucky barely won that game in Lexington. So we'll have to kind of see how that game goes next week, you know, here in Starkville. But I like State's chances. You know, last year, as awful as State's defense was last year, it took a last-second 51-yard field goal for Kentucky to win that ball game up there in Lexington. So them coming here, State's a little bit better than they were a year ago. And I think that, you know, like I said, down the stretch, State's got a pretty good chance to win just about every game with the exception of that Alabama game.
Yeah, the middle of the pack in the SEC, man, is just – it's really just a hodgepodge. It's hard when we do these SEC rankings every week for game day to, you know, to figure out what's going on in the middle. I mean, we know who the top is, and I think, as you say, we know who the top three are when you look at what Georgia and Auburn are doing. I do think Auburn hit a stride that was different than the way they were playing at the very beginning of the year. And you know, you mentioned Kentucky – and, you know, on paper, there are people that want to jump on board with this team at 5-1, but Kentucky, Florida, they just have not been impressive in winning. Florida's played a little bit of a more difficult schedule to this point. Of course, they beat Kentucky in the head-to-head meeting, and Florida had their game with Northern Colorado postponed because of the weather. But you just look at Kentucky, and they struggled with Southern Miss, they struggled with Eastern Michigan, they struggled to close out Missouri. They have not been impressive in running out to this 5-1 record. I do think Texas A&M right now is the number four team in the conference, just based on how they played against Alabama, and that changes week to week. But this team, I think, is getting better. We'll go back to the UCLA game for them in a second, but you look at how they played against Nicholls State, against Louisiana Lafayette, and it was just not a clean and crisp performance. They really didn't dominate those opponents and put them away early. The UCLA game, though, Logan, this season for them looks a lot different. Even though UCLA made this furious comeback, if Texas A&M gets one stop down the stretch and holds on and wins that game, then their season looks a lot different right now. But the middle of the pack of the SEC is just one jumbled mass, and it's hard to – you know, to put one team above another right now. I think the top is pretty clear and the bottom is pretty clear when you look at the grouping of Vanderbilt, Ole Miss, and Missouri down there. And the Rebels, of course, have Vanderbilt at home Saturday at 2:30. One of those teams is going to leave that game with the coach talking about improvement and momentum. You know, maybe that will be Ole Miss. I think the Rebels are in a stretch of three very winnable games right here with Vanderbilt, LSU, and Arkansas all coming to Oxford. Now, there's, you know, nothing in the SEC is a given for Ole Miss this season, and this could very well be a team that goes 0-8 in the conference. But based on how I have seen Ole Miss compete for stretches in games, for a period of time at Cal, and for the second half at Auburn, you know, I think this is a stretch where they could win some games. And that's why it's an important group of three games, because if they could come out of this with two wins or three and come out of this with some confidence intact moving on to November, well, then maybe they could set themselves up to play well and finish a little bit stronger than people think they will. They've got a road trip to Kentucky in November. They've got a home game with Texas A&M in November. Also Louisiana Lafayette before the Egg Bowl in Starkville. This is a big stretch for Ole Miss. Either you win a few of these games, you play well, and you come out with some confidence, or if you don't, the reverse happens. If you lose these three games, then all of a sudden you're 2-6, and I think you could be in danger of seeing what you saw in 2011 at the end of that season. If you remember those three games, after it was announced that Houston Nutt would not return as Ole Miss coach, you know, that was the worst stretch of football I've seen at Ole Miss. It just really, it looked like the Rebels were mailing it in. And if you get to November and this team hasn't won more than two games, and all of a sudden, you know, there's, you know, a team that's questioning itself and confidence issues, throw in a couple of injuries, and then, you know, focus returns on the looming NCAA sanctions and what that will be. I think that could be, you know, a recipe for more disaster for this team. You know, that's why this stretch is so important. And I think the Rebels have a chance to play well and win in this stretch.
Yeah, and I think you have to throw Arkansas in the mix too as one of those lower tier SEC teams. Just really haven't been impressed. They've been in some games. That Arkansas and Texas A&M game, I actually got to watch most of that while I was on the road one week, and that was a pretty good ball game. I know Arkansas got robbed of a touchdown during that ball game, but yeah, it just seems like it was, or maybe it was A&M that got robbed of a touchdown. I can't remember it. I remember watching it in the hotel when I was in Georgia a couple of weeks ago, but you know, they really just haven't been that impressive either. But you know, for Mississippi State, you know, you look at their non-conference opponents that they still have left on the schedule. You know, between BYU and UMass, they've won one ball game. So, you know, those are two wins right there. That puts Mississippi State at five wins just with those non-conference games. And then, you know, there's some winnable conference games in there as well. State's got a chance to win six of its last seven. You know, I mentioned earlier that A&M game and the Arkansas game on the road. Those are the two that really stand out to me, you know, as far as games you could probably flip a coin on. But, you know, for Mississippi State right now, the focus is taking care of business at home. Yeah, I think they can win every home game with the exception of Alabama. And, you know, that should land them in a pretty good bowl this year. It should be someplace warm and sunny in the month of December and January, and the early part of January.
What are you seeing in BYU, Logan? I know that as I prepare the top 25 ballot for AP, I mean, that was a team at the beginning of the season that I was thinking, do they need to be in here around 25 or 23? I mean, you know, they were getting some looks to be ranked at the beginning, and they won that first game, and they've fallen off the map. They've had some injuries, but yeah, they've had a lot of games that have just been blowouts. I mean, what do you see in this team as they get ready for Starkville? Which I think, Logan, there's an interesting history there with Mississippi State and BYU, just because you don't think of them as – intersectional opponents, but they've met a few times and they've had some good games.
Yeah, they have. And last year was another good game between the two. I mean, Mississippi State goes out to Provo and game goes into double overtime. You know, it's a game Mississippi State very well could have won, and BYU hits a tight end in the end zone in that second overtime. But I think the guy had caught one pass all season. And, you know, he's a guy that you really just, you know, one of those unsung heroes you see at the end of the ball game sometimes. And, yeah, they made the play to win that ball game. I remember Nick Fitzgerald. I was standing in the end zone. Nick Fitzgerald comes rushing over, and it was in one of those overtime periods, and he just comes rushing over, and he kind of helicoptered across the goal line right there in front of me. And, yeah, I really think that was the play that really established Nick Fitzgerald as the guy. I think he gained a lot of respect from his teammates on that play, because Nick Fitzgerald was the guy, you remember last year, the quarterback controversy that Mississippi State had. You know, they had four quarterbacks in the mix vying for that starting job. Nick Fitzgerald kind of took until that second week before he actually claimed the job for his own. And, you know, it was really, you know, the team's kind of split in different sections. I think, you know, each player probably had their own guy of who they thought would be the quarterback. And Nick was, you know, he's kind of been immature at times. You know, he's really not the leader that Dak Prescott was. He's been kind of immature with some things off the field. And, you know, I really think that, you know, it took that play for his teammates to say, okay, well, this guy's willing to stick his neck out for us and really ready to go stick his nose in there and try to make a play. You know, and there was a couple plays before that. I know in the Samford game, you know, he scores a touchdown without a helmet on. And, of course, that play got called back. But, you know, a quarterback that's willing to, you know, take a sneak and dive through the pile without a helmet on, you know, that takes some guts there. And, you know, I think that game really established Nick as the go-to guy for Mississippi State in that BYU game last year. But, you know, going back to BYU's problems, you know, you're right. It's been a lot of injuries, a lot of things, you know, that just really haven't gone their way. Their offense has just been horrible. And a lot of that has to do with, you know, their quarterback, Tanner Mangum. You know, he's been banged up in and out of the lineup. Really just haven't really established the consistency there. But, you know, you're looking at the skill players that I saw last year in Provo, not a lot of them left on that roster. I mean, that tight end that caught the game winning touchdown is back, but really he's the only skill player name that I remember from last year. They've had a complete turnover with their receivers, with their quarterback, with their running back. It's just a, you know, their defense is okay. I mean, they got some players. They've always got some Samoans that are with some big old long names that you can hardly pronounce. But you know, and they got older players. Obviously, I did crack up a little bit Monday when Dan Mullen said that they had a veteran team. And you look at BYU, and they've always got guys that are, you know, 25 years old, half the team's married, and yeah, that was one of my notes from last year's team. They had it in their notes of how many married players they had on their roster, and it was like 20 or 30 something of them, and I compared it to Mississippi State, who had one married player, and that was Richie Brown. And I think this year Mississippi State has one married player in Josiah Phillips, and that's the only player that's married right now. So, you know, just a whole different concept with those two teams. But I think it's going to be a different concept when they take the field Saturday too, because, like I said, this BYU team is not very good. They are going to have their quarterback Tanner Mangum back. So that could help them a little bit. They may have a little bit better showing, but Mississippi State coming off a bye week, I feel like they've got a lot to prove. I think State's going to have a good day on Saturday.
Well, you know, I look at Vanderbilt, Logan, and of course, this is a team that, again, started out 3-0, and what on earth possessed someone in the Vanderbilt camp there after a win against Kansas State to come out with bring on Alabama. We want Alabama. You know, that just seems like a terrible judgment. But you know, it was a ranked opponent, Kansas State, that Vanderbilt defeated in week three there in Nashville. And you know, you look at Vanderbilt in the early part of the season, they controlled Middle Tennessee, and that's usually a difficult game for Vanderbilt, kind of a, you know, a regional rival there, and Middle Tennessee is known to have good football teams. And hey, we got to give a shout out to John Pitts there. Remember, he had that that brief career as the Middle Tennessee Blue Raider in the costume on the sidelines. So I always think of John when I think of the Blue Raiders there. But so Vanderbilt controls that game. Then, of course, they blow out a SWAC opponent in Alabama A&M. They get to week three against Kansas State, and you know, they play good defense, and they win a 14-7 game, and They've got some momentum. But, you know, look, Logan, this is every year. It takes a while. It takes a month. It takes some games before we learn more about these teams. And what we saw from Vanderbilt in week four was that, you know, put Vanderbilt in a group of many other teams in the SEC that are not ready to compete with Alabama. Alabama winning 59-0 there in Nashville. But as Vanderbilt has gone through a stretch now of games against four consecutive ranked opponents, that would be Kansas State, Alabama, Florida, and then last week Georgia, Vanderbilt has really struggled now to run the ball and stop the run. I mean, much like Ole Miss, you know, you look at these teams in the national statistics from the NCAA, and in terms of rushing offense and rushing defense, the highest ranking for either of these teams. I think Vanderbilt is like number 120 in rushing offense. But, you know, that's it. You know, neither of them have been able to run or stop the run. And, you know, you've heard for years, all you hear growing up, Logan, is you got to be able to run the football if you're going to win an SEC. Well, Ole Miss and Vanderbilt aren't doing anything to disprove that theory right now. And they have both struggled in those areas, running and stopping the run. I mean, what you could have on Saturday is something like the movable object versus the resistible presence, the resistible force. You know, if you're a physics teacher, it could be a nightmare. But anyway, so, you know, like I said, one team is going to be able to do that better than the other. One coach is going to stand up and say, you know, this was a great win, and we played well, and this is about momentum, and we showed improvement today. You know, one team will be able to do that. This could be Ole Miss. This is a chance for Ole Miss. And again, you know, this is an important three-game stretch. So can the Rebels build on their second half against Auburn? You know, I didn't hear anybody say we won the second half. That's good. But they did have a winning feeling, you know. You don't win halves. You know, games are won in whole, but Ole Miss played much better in the second half against Auburn. You can't take that away. They looked a lot better in the third and fourth quarters. But that comes with an asterisk because it was a 35-3 game at halftime. So Auburn comes out with a different intensity level. And the, you know, the Tigers didn't have to get out of their comfort zone in the second half. They could just stay with the things that that they do well with their base sets on offense and defense. So, you know, yes, Ole Miss played better and accomplished some things and looked good in the third and fourth quarters, but that does come with a little bit of an asterisk. That shouldn't matter to Ole Miss this week. The Rebels need to take that momentum, bottle it. You know, they say they've had a good week of practice. We'll see. I mean, this is their chance to break into the win column in the SEC. And it's not going to be easy because nothing is going to come easily for this team. I've mentioned Vanderbilt's troubles at stopping the run. They've been pretty good in pass defense. And, of course, the passing game is Ole Miss's strength. The Rebels lead the SEC in passing yards per game. Much of that was accumulated in the first 2 weeks against South Alabama and Tennessee Martin. Still, they lead the SEC in passing yards per game. Vanderbilt is second in the SEC in passing yards allowed per game at 140. So a matchup of strength against strength there. These Ole Miss receivers are going to have to find ways to get open. The Ole Miss offensive line is going to protect, as it did against Vanderbilt in both halves. The Rebels gave up just one sack for the game at Auburn. One sack at Auburn after giving up 10 sacks in games against Cal and Alabama. So a big improvement in pass protection for Ole Miss against Auburn. They're going to need to carry that over. You know, give Shea Patterson some time in the pocket. Yes, he is a mobile quarterback and can extend plays and make plays with his feet, but don't require him to do that, you know, on so many snaps in the game as he was forced to do against Cal and Alabama. If they can carry that over against Vanderbilt, I think these receivers will find some ways to get open, and I think he'll get the ball to them, particularly A.J. Brown. Brown with 10 catches for, you know, more, went over 100 yards last week. You know, another big game for A.J. Brown, who appears to be healthy now. And, you know, after the game, they told us that they didn't really, or Phil Longo, I should say, the offensive coordinator, told us that he did not intentionally target A.J. Brown. Well, it certainly looked that way. And if that's not the case, then what we're seeing is a good amount of chemistry that has developed, a good amount of trust, you know, from Shea Patterson to A.J. Brown. Certainly Patterson is comfortable looking for Brown and going to him if he's open there. So there's no shame in saying you're looking for A.J. Brown. They need to get this guy the ball to have their best chance. It's a deep and talented group of Ole Miss receivers, but Brown stands out right now. He's the best in that group. Logan, any final thoughts, man, before we wrap it up?
Yeah, you know, looking for Mississippi State, you know, some things that they need to improve on after those two lopsided losses. I mean, State's got to pass the ball better. I mean, they're one of the worst passing teams in the SEC right now. Nick Fitzgerald in the last two games hasn't looked good at all. I mean, one touchdown pass, four interceptions, you know, one return for a touchdown. And, you know, just they've got to find ways to get, you know, some deep threats down the field. That's one thing Ole Miss has done well that Mississippi State doesn't. You know, they don't have any big receiving targets. I mean, they've got a couple of guys that are, you know, really early in their careers, pretty raw, kind of guys that still need to develop that are, you know, they got 3 6-foot-4 receivers that they signed in the 2016 class, and none of those guys are really fully developed yet. I mean, Jamal Couch played last year as a true freshman. You know, he had two catches on the sideline in an Auburn game for 60 yards, and maybe that was kind of a, you know, him taking a step forward. I know that they worked him and Reggie Todd a lot last week, got those guys a lot of reps. So they're looking for, you know, one of those 6-foot-4 guys to take a step forward this week. I know getting Gabe Miles back this week could help. He's missed the last three ball games with a foot injury. He's supposedly back this week. Trevor Jung, the linebacker, is supposed to be back this week. So we'll have to see if getting some of those injured guys back is going to help Mississippi State, get cohesiveness back. A couple of guys that could affect that game, though, is left tackle Martinez Rankin. He's questionable for this week. He left that Auburn game in the very first series. So Mississippi State was without their left tackle, and they get really young really quickly at that position. They went from a fifth-year senior left tackle to a redshirt freshman in Greg Island. And if you watch that Auburn game, Paris, they had seven false starts in that game, and they were all on the offensive line. Three of them were with redshirt freshman right tackle Stuart Reese, one with redshirt freshman left tackle Greg Island. So those are four of your seven right there. And then they had one apiece on Darrell Williams and Deion Calhoun at guard. So they kind of spread the false starts around on that offensive line. So they got to limit those. And being back at home should help that a little bit as well. But, you know, still got some question marks there. They're going to be probably without Corey Thomas, the starting defensive tackle, again for the fourth straight game. So, you know, they got some injuries that have affected their play, but they just need to play better all overall. And I think it really starts with that passing game. They need to make some strides in that area and move the chains and stop getting in so many third and long situations where, you know, the defense can kind of pin their ears back and know they're going to throw the ball. And, you know, they need to just keep stay out of those third and long situations where they're not so relied upon their passing game.
Folks, that's it for this edition of Double Coverage, a production of the Daily Journal. We thank you for clicking in with us today. Be sure to check out The Memo, our news podcast, every Wednesday and Friday, and Prep Rally for all your high school sports needs every Wednesday. And Logan and I will be back with you next week for another round of Double Coverage.